You're listening to a curated podcast from the Beyond Infinity radio program, broadcast live on Tuesdays from 11 a.m. from our Mornington studios in Victoria, Australia. Presented by me, Piers Cunningham.
And me, John Young.
And into our science and technology news for the week. Those pesky, revolting cane toads that have sort of taken over the far north of Australia, they were a classic example of how to wreck an environment by importing foreign species.
We had rabbits down here in Melbourne.
They brought in rabbits, they brought in foxes, and they brought in cane toads. The cane toads were supposed to get rid of the beetle that was supposed to control pests in the cane plantations of North Queensland and elsewhere, and they went completely out of control, and now they're serious
pests.
And they're all over the place. I think they've spread as far as Darwin. They're all over far north, and even getting down towards Brisbane, I think. So they've taken over a big swathe of territory up there in the north of Australia. The University of Queensland have been looking at ways of trying to use baits that replicate the smell of food made from the poison of adult cane toads to capture and eradicate up to 10,000 juvenile toads in one hit. They're hoping they're going to have a product that will actually go on sale in supermarkets and hardware stores within a couple of years' time. And what they're doing at the moment, they're relying on volunteers to do the slightly dubious task of actually capturing cane toads, picking them up. Apparently, you can pick them up if you sort of grab them from behind.
Because it's the toxin that leaches out of their skin.
I don't know whether it would be toxic just from contact with your hand. Maybe you'd be better off to wear gloves. That might be a good idea. But they are relying on community groups and volunteers to get out there and catch adult toads, and then they can redirect the toads from landfill, where they would wind up if they were just killed, if they were, caught in other traps or people had picked them up, killed them. Quite a few of them. You'll hear the pop, pop, pop if you drive over them when you're driving on roads. There's a few squashed ones dried up on roads up in Queensland because there's that many of them. They're all over the place. If they can catch adult ones, then they can extract what they need from them, and then they can set up these baits. The pheromone, which is a sex hormone, which is actually also the toxin from the adults, they can actually use that, put inside a trap. They put it next to a river, sort of semi-submerged, and all the little tadpoles will come in thinking that there's a food source, and then they get trapped inside this plastic bin type thing with an opening at the side, and they get trapped in there and they can't get out, and they reckon that there's the potential for one trap to eradicate up to 10,000 juvenile toads in one hit.
So, and what's interesting is a couple of facts I found online. One female toad can produce around 30,000 eggs in a single clutch. So this, you know, it's a huge problem because, you know, so you need three traps to maybe address one female toad's clutch.
If they put them everywhere and they get out there and put them in river systems, this could be a really good way of getting rid of them. They have tried lots of different things over the years to try to eradicate cane toads, because they do a lot of damage, especially to native species.
Well, another thing that was interesting is that the toads are each other's worst enemies. So apparently if there's too many toads and they start eating each other, there's sort of a bit of cannibalism going on between the toads. The more toads you remove means that the surviving toads actually have more of the environment to consume and then enjoy themselves. So it's a significant problem, because the more toads you have, it's a more of a problem. But then even a small amount of toads can still be a big problem
on
the environment.
And it doesn't take them long with that kind of breeding, you know, with the ability to produce that number of tadpoles from one female, their numbers will recover pretty quickly. So you need a kind of constant effort to rein in that cane toad population. Now, there's been rumours about Apple with Project Titan. It's rumoured to be Apple's self-driving car technology. And in fact, since February 2015, there have been various reports that Apple is working on a car that will give Tesla a run for its money. There's other companies that we know about that are doing this. Uber, for example, and John's got a story about Uber that'll come up a little bit later in the tech news for the week. There's Tesla, there's Uber, and there's Google's company Waymo, a division of Alphabet, which are all working on driverless cars, autonomous vehicles, and have been doing for quite a while. And this puts pay to what was just a rumor, but I suppose a rumor with a certain amount of foundation. They've now actually applied for a patent. This patent is for computer graphics software called Collision Avoidance of Arbitrary Polygonal Obstacles. The method describes techniques that use simple geometry to identify which edges of which obstacles an agent is most likely to collide. There's also the idea, and I came across in reading about Apple's rumored self-driving Project Titan, is that OpenAI, which is an organization that's using artificial intelligence to kind of help this process of autonomous driving, mm-hmm. recently incorporated a popular open world game, Grand Theft Auto, onto its machine learning testbed,
right.
which is called Universe, making it easier for developers to kickstart their own self-driving projects. So one of the things they do is they want to simulate, instead of having to have unmanned and sort of semi-tested cars on the road mm-hmm. in real world situations where they could be dangerous, mm-hmm. they want to be able to simulate driving conditions. And one of the ways they can do that is with Grand Theft Auto.
In a game, yeah.
Which hopefully they won't take too much on board from that, because one of the things you can do is run people over, pedestrians
yes.
and the like.
And so, that's actually treated as a bonus point, I think it is.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
Now, hopefully they fix up sort of the car navigation and Siri, the way that they process all that through the systems, because I've actually watched a Google versus the Apple car navigation. So if you're saying, I want to go to, you know, Siri, take me here, it actually wasn't coming up with the correct location. Now, if this is AI, if once it is developed and deployed, hopefully it's not sort of sending in the wrong direction.
The default on an Apple device is to go to Apple Maps, mm-hmm. but there are so often problems with that. Right. I much prefer using the Google app,
the clear winner,
to get me places. It has been going on for a lot longer. They've had vehicles all over the world. And actually, when Apple introduced their Maps service some years ago, the guy who was responsible for that, he wound up leaving the company soon after. So mm-hmm. it was a bit of a disaster for Apple. They've plugged away with it. It's not a useless piece of software. It's not a useless mapping service that they've got. Google's just had the jump on them for several years. So it doesn't surprise that they're ahead still. Also in news this week, scientists at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and the University of California in Berkeley have come up with a prototype material that sucks water out of the very air that you're breathing and stores it using nothing more than sunlight and what's called MOFs. Now, MOFs are metal organic frameworks mm-hmm. that are made from metal ions and organic compounds that form a sponge-like configuration with high porosity. They're thermally and mechanically stable. They have high specific surface area, which exhibits selective absorption. So by tweaking the makeup of this crystalline compound, mm-hmm. you can actually set it to absorb a particular material. Mm-hmm. So if you tweak it the right way, you can set it to absorb moisture from air.
Right.
Now, I think you were saying that you've read some of the reports on this and some of the response to these media reports. They're saying that at this stage, the amount of water that's being extracted from the atmosphere is very little.
Yeah.
But obviously, there is a huge amount of water out there in the Earth's atmosphere. They reckon that you'd be able to satisfy humans' drinking needs mm-hmm. by extracting water from the atmosphere. If you were able to do that, you wouldn't actually have a bad effect on the atmosphere. There's much moisture there.
Yeah, okay.
So it is an untapped resource.
Yep.
There are plenty of places in the world that are short of water, and maybe these MOFs, these metal organic frameworks, will be the answer to that.
And with droughts all across the world at different times of the year, it seems that, you know, water is the resource that we really need. Clean drinking water is the number one, I think, problem, isn't it, across the world in terms of...
Absolutely. Well, there's a lot of disease which flows from that. Obviously, it would generate clean water, and it uses solar energy to
produce
the process. Yep. Moving on with the news, the SLS, the Space Launch System, that's NASA's new heavy lift rocket, tentatively scheduled for an unmanned test out to the lunar region of space in 2018, and then a manned mission out orbiting the moon, that area, in 2021. Well, you know, you might want to not hold your breath for that, because NASA's own Office of Inspector General, who kind of looks at their finances and audits things mm-hmm. and sees how they're tracking with schedules and so on, has actually come out and said that, quote, the program supporting these first couple of flights are not being funded at recommended levels. There's also a whole lot of other stuff which is going to require funding, including the hardware on the ground that is meant to support launches of these vehicles. These include building a new mobile launch platform. You remember that crawler that used to drive the Saturn V from inside the assembly building several miles out, very slowly out to where it was launched from 39A at the Cape Canaveral. They're building a new one of them for mm-hmm. the Space Launch System. That's only in production, so to speak. There's also modifications to certain buildings at NASA's Kennedy Space Center in Florida, which also needs to happen as well. The problem is that if there's any issue that pops up, they don't have enough money to cover that. So they may be okay if everything's absolutely flawless, but the reality is that these things don't go 100% smoothly.
Yeah.
This is a very big piece of technology. It's the most powerful heavy lift rocket since the Saturn V. In fact, more powerful than Saturn V. Doesn't sound like they've got the funding that they need. It's recommended they look at this if they're serious about preventing slippage of their schedules. Mm. And then this more distant goal, which is to use this heavy lift rocket to get out to Mars, to send people to the surface of Mars, they're saying that that could wind up costing a huge amount of money, I think a cost that could exceed $210 billion wow. by 2033. For that reason, the OIG recommends that the space agency figure out ways to save money on its Mars mission, either by partnering with other government space agencies or the private space industry. We'll find out in 2018 whether mm-hmm. this is true, mm-hmm. because that's when the first unmanned flight of SLS is scheduled. Mm. It's an expensive business, and I think what'll have to happen is they'll need international partners, just as they have with the International Space Station, and they'll also be looking to the private sector to help out as well. Now, just one more bit of news from me before I hand over to John. There's been some news about Burger King has been running ads trying to sell their Whopper burgers, and what they've been doing in these ads is they've been saying the key words, okay, Google.
That's right, yeah. That's what sets up my phone. You train it to your voice, but if some people haven't trained it properly, then other voices can recognize that.
Right. So this says, okay, Google, what is the Whopper burger? And then someone from Burger King, and it suggested that their marketing head might have done this, has gone in and edited the WikiLeaks, the Wikipedia listing for the Whopper burger, and basically just included a piece of advertising copy effectively. It says, the Whopper is a burger consisting of a flame-grilled patty made with 100% beef with no preservatives or fillers, blah, 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 blah. Now, they were able to edit that entry in mm-hmm. Wikipedia, which you can do, mm-hmm. but not for commercial purposes. When this got out, when people said, oh, hang on, this thing's activating my phone, I've just watched an ad, my yep. phone's being activated, then my phone's actually reading out this Wikipedia listing, mm-hmm. Wikipedia responded by actually locking it down, going back to a kind of standard definition of a burger, mm-hmm. locking down so it couldn't be edited anymore. Yep. And I think Google actually altered, they did a one-off sort of alteration so that if that voice command or query was put in, it just didn't respond to it. Yeah.
Because what happens is when you say that command, and then, so if you say, okay, Google, your phone then comes up with a little screen, and then you put in the command, and then it would search for relevant information. So it's automatically then going across to the Wikipedia site and actually reading back out that response. That's how it's automatically happening for the phones. And I've had that happen. I've listened to a podcast before and someone said that command and then my phone started actually listing out the words that have been said in the podcast. So it does happen, and it's rare, but it does happen. Yep. So it's good they've been shut it down. I guess it was a smart piece of guerrilla marketing.
Yep.
But the community at Wikipedia, which is a very broad community, they monitor changes. So they will go in, and if they see something like, well, hang on, that looks a bit sus, they'll go and re-edit it. So there's probably a bit of a war that was happening in there. Yep. Burger King were in there and editing it, and then somebody else was coming in and correcting it and back and forth. Mm. Yeah.
So in the end, Wikipedia had to lock it down and lock in a neutral definition of what a burger was. This was affecting, I guess, anything, any device of yours that can respond to the command, okay, Google. Specifically in this case, I think it was targeting Google Home, which I think is not a phone. It's a box that's set up for voice commands. So you can use it to control lights, control televisions, ask queries.
It's kind of the update of the app that they had for, say, Chromecast. I can't remember what the old Chromecast app was called in your phone, but Home now encompasses that, where it connects to your media devices, Chromecasts and Nexus players and things like that.
Because I think Amazon has a device that you can have in
Alexa.
Like, a column, little device that sits on your kitchen bench or something and listens to basically everything you say and is there to do things for you and turn media on or off or
turn the lights on or off. Yeah. And if you've got those colored lights, you can say, all right, change light setting to cool blue, and then it will actually adjust. So there's lights that you've got which can go through all the different spectrum. If you've set it up, a little bit of programming, really, really basic, your phone can then control that. So if you want to walk into a room and say, I need a light blue, it will do it for you straight away.
You know, the other thing I didn't realize, and just a slight digression here, but when you want to wire up for, say, internet, it used to be that you'd plug your modem into a telephone socket, mm-hmm. and that was the way that you could get your broadband. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously, it's actually will be the same even with the NBN, because that's
for
only
those
fiber to the node.
Yep.
Now what they can do is they don't need to run telephone cable to a socket for your modem, because they can actually use power cables to send data along.
Right. Yeah,
so where you've got your power points in mm-hmm. the walls, mm-hmm. those same cables can be used for data. So if you plug your phone in to charge it up, well, you're actually making a data connection as well.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the throughput there of the broad.
How well it does.
I haven't seen much reports on that.
Apparently it does it really well.
Yeah, okay. Because some of those repeaters, I don't know if you've seen them, you can go and buy those repeaters. So your Wi-Fi signal, it might be in one end of the house. Mm. And then in the middle of the house, if you need a boost, you might buy a repeater. So it takes the signal and then boosts it further out.
Yep.
Because it has to go between points, multiple points, there can be a bit of a slowdown on those.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's best to position your Wi-Fi in, say, the middle of the house at a high point, and that should hopefully get the best coverage and away from as many walls as possible. Not always that easy, but there are some tricks that you can use to improve your signal.
That's right. They work better, I think, vertically.
Higher because the signal goes out, sort of think of it like a sphere, the signal goes out from there. And so if you have it higher, it's sort of reaching, it's not hitting the ground and bouncing back up. It's coming out further before it hits the ground. So it's more of a reflection there, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. Yep.
In the last couple of weeks, we've talked about some of the new Samsung products, particularly the Samsung Galaxy S8 and the S8 Plus.
Yep, the new phone, the new flagship.
It's been very, very popular. Last year, there were pre-orders of the Galaxy S7, so the previous model, of around about 100,000 units. The Galaxy Note 7, before it had all the problems, had around about 200,000 pre-orders. And this is in Korea, we're the home of Samsung. Mm-hmm. Now, that was a record in itself at that time, but the pre-orders currently, this is actually a few days old, so it's probably much bigger than this now, but they're currently at 550,000 units.
Gee.
So this is...
huge launch.
Looking like it's probably going to surpass the 1 million units in the pre-orders alone. So this is just looking like a huge winner for Samsung. They come out really strong. We did talk about that on the show last year, that they really needed to have a strong year this year because with the failures of the Note 7, the concern was if people considered that all their devices were going to have the same problems, then no one's going to buy them. They've put a lot of effort into this and it seems to be paying off. Look, we can't wait to sort of get more real world use and people, you know, actually getting their hands, because if there is problems with the battery or the like, then this could...
It's only just starting to go on sale now, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Australia. I think it's on, you can pre-order in Australia, I believe.
But there's two models. Yeah. There's a big screen version and there's a smaller standard size.
Funnily enough, the demand for the S8 is, the S8 Plus, sorry, is the bigger model, and that's actually getting quite solid demand as well. Normally people will be going for the sort of the standard size, but the Plus version is actually in high demand as well, which is good to see.
Cool.
You mentioned Uber before. I think we talked about it last week, just about sort of the troubles that Uber is going through. I mean, we've talked previously about the CEO problem that they've had. This week, just wanted to touch upon the financial troubles that they're looking to be having at the moment. So the gross bookings of 2016 hit $20 billion, and that more than a doubling from the prior year. Now, this is financial figures they've released to Bloomberg and reported by CNN. They're a private company, so they don't have to release these numbers, so it's interesting they have. But once the cuts have then gone to the drivers, their total amount that Uber received was $6.5 billion for the year. Obviously, they've got rapid growth going on, and they've got high operating costs, so they actually lost $2.8 billion in 2016. Now, they did sell the China business arm midway through last year. There's probably some improvement they'll see over that. But with, they want to continue their growth. And so we'll see how it does improve over time. I guess you've got big backers with Uber. They're not looking at shutting the doors anytime soon. It's going to continue on.
They'd probably factor in losing a few billion along the way.
I would imagine so. Yeah, people still have faith in the business at this stage. We've talked a lot over the years about the meter data retention. This is the Australian government's act, which basically says that ISPs must collect the meter data information of all users across Australia.
And the same applies in many other countries around the world, it should be noted.
There are other countries that definitely adopt a similar method. The data is things like, you know, where you are, what sites you're going to, what time of the day, how often you go to these sites. Supposedly, it doesn't get right into the information. It won't drill down to specific pages. But that's a bit unknown because some of the ISPs don't necessarily know what to collect, so they're just collecting everything. But last week was when it officially came into, that's it, you have to have it now. So there were some ISPs that were holding off until it had to come in. I mean, I think it's been at least 12 months where there's not really a trial, but where the ISPs have been advised to start it up and collect this data. Well, it's now, you have to do it. It's part of the law. You have to collect this information. So if it's called upon, it can be used by whichever agency requires it at the time.
Yep.
The argument is that it's to capture those who are doing the wrong thing. But the potential of abuse, in my opinion, is far too high. Now, I just wanted to talk about a good news story, one that I find very heartwarming, I guess. Sometimes we talk about doom and gloom, but this is quite a positive story. So, reported by the ABC here in Australia, researchers are they're hoping that virtual reality will help kids in pain. So those that are in hospital or those that can't actually get out to zoos will be able to have the benefit of virtually visiting a zoo. So this is a startup company called Phoria. It's Phoria. And they're working with the Murdoch Children's Research Institute and Melbourne Zoo to design a VR experience for kids.
Fantastic.
So what they do is they've got a number of GoPros that are set up in a configuration that allows full 360 degree capturing of the video. They record that, and then that's turned into a virtual reality experience for kids. So they can wear the headsets. Now this can be with Google goggles, like the your own phone, and you can put that into a VR display, or even go to that next level where it's a proper, you know, a Samsung VR or any of the popular brands. And this is where the kids can fully immerse themselves into a zoo environment just watching the VR. So
Awesome. There
has been a trial. Axel Udenbosch Moore, he's 11, and he was one of the first kids to try the VR therapy. He had been diagnosed with tissue cancer of his sinus in September of 2015 and had to undergo months of chemotherapy and radiation therapy. So he was saying it's quite boring, just had to watch TV and read his book and go to sleep. And so this exposes him to a different world that he hasn't been involved in.
Absolutely. Imagine people who are confined to wheelchairs or
kind the of elderly, those that maybe can't get out of nursing homes. This could be a really good thing for them as well.
This is where VR is going to go. And I know that there are companies getting right into this and developing the software for things like the Oculus Rift, and Sony's got their own version of it. Samsung's got their own version of it. And they're all still vying for the kind of dominant platform at this stage. Yeah. But it does hold the potential to transport you to a completely different place and really make it immersive and feel like the real thing. So it's great. Thanks for listening.
And head to beyondinfinity.com.au for the best bits from the live show or to connect with us on social media. We welcome your feedback and suggestion for future shows.